This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. We got an announcement out of Ford today. The company plans to add 350 jobs at two U.S. factories, one of them in Michigan, to meet expected demand for electric vehicles. Now, these are all cars that have not actually gone on sale yet. The automaker says that 200 workers will be hired at Ford's Electric Vehicle Center in Dearborn. The other projects in Missouri. There's something of a bigger picture to be examined here. And with us to talk about this and some other automotive news is Daniel House, associate business editor at the Detroit News and a columnist. Hey, Daniel.
Hey, how are you?
All right. So the Dearborn news possibly is a little smaller in comparison to the $100 million Ford is going to invest in Kansas City. But, I mean, on the merits, do you see this as something significant in the company's ongoing strategy to electrify?
Absolutely. I mean, I think you're seeing with Ford and even more so with General Motors that electrification is real. With this election, I think you're going to see more alignment between the incoming administration and the auto industry in terms of the direction they want to go on electrification. The Trump administration focused a lot on yesterday's technology. They were worried about rollbacks in fuel economy and trying to pull back from the Obama years. There's no question that I think Biden is much more focused on electrics. The problem is the market isn't necessarily there yet. What I think is significant about the Ford announcement today is look at the product that they're talking about here. It's a small transit van.
Mm-hmm.
It's a product that can be used by grocery stores and delivery services and things in various parts of the country, both urban and suburban applications. It's not necessarily going to be something that is owned by you and me. It's something that's going to be bought by business. And I think you're seeing that a lot with a lot of these startup companies also in the EV space. They're focusing some of their product on the business and commercial side of the market, not on the citizen side.
Yeah. I mean, since you mentioned Joe Biden, I saw a couple of news outlets this week. Looking at you, Wall Street Journal, making much of the fact that Joe Biden is a car guy. I mean, how deep is that? We know he's got a thing for Corvettes, but can you tell us something about his record as senator and former vice president in terms of policies that really affected auto companies and their staff?
Yeah, thank you. Liking a vintage Corvette does not qualify you as a car guy unless you're Jay Leno and you have, you know, however many dozens of them. He's a car guy. But having said that, the president-elect is someone who clearly has been friendly to labor unions, to the UAW, I think has made himself known to say, I'm going to be the most labor-friendly president you've seen maybe ever, but probably not ever, but certainly in a long time. He was, of course, vice president in the Obama administration when they made that difficult call in the first few months of the administration that they were going to begin a bailout process, first of Chrysler, that culminated in General Motors. These were federally induced bankruptcies that rescued both of those companies. Now, Chrysler did end up becoming controlled by the Italians and Fiat, is very soon going to be controlled by the French through the Italians.
Mm-hmm.
So we've seen that movie before in Auburn Hills. But nevertheless, yeah, the administration he was a part of did do the most audacious rescue the auto industry has ever seen. I don't think there's any question about it. And as I've said many, many times on this air and others, I believe that a Republican president, when faced with the same potential economic calamity in the electorally vital industrial Midwest, would have done exactly the same thing. Look at what's happened in this election. The reason Joe Biden is president-elect is because of Michigan, is because of Pennsylvania, is because of these other industrial states. So it's very critical. And he did play a role in the administration in doing that.
Biden said a couple times during the campaign he wants to bring as many auto jobs back to America as possible,
right,
fueled
mm-hmm.
primarily by an electrified future. It sounds in step with what the big three have been working on, but I mean, I'm just not sure like what's realistic to hope for in terms of the past grandeur that the industry had in this region.
Yeah, well, I think you can forget past grandeur. That train has, a proverbial train has left the station.
Okay.
I'm glad you brought this up because I think the president-elect has got a misunderstanding of what electrification of the auto industry actually is likely to mean. What it's more likely to mean is that there will be fewer jobs in production. as electric powertrains become more ubiquitous in the marketplace and in more segments of the market, that means that there's going to be fewer internal combustion engines that are purchased and or produced. ICEs, as they're called in the trade, use a lot more parts, demand a lot more parts, have a lot bigger supply base, and employ a lot more people to assemble those engines. They're becoming increasingly expensive. Electric vehicles and the price of batteries is coming down. And so ultimately, I think you're going to see a net diminution of employment in the industry because electric vehicles have fewer parts, they last longer, and as a result, the replacement rate is likely to decline.
Yeah.
And so when he talks about creating all these jobs, I know that there's a conversation going on in the industry as we speak saying there's a fundamental disconnect here between what you think is going to happen and what is actually trending.
Hmm. I mean, which is not to say it's a bad thing or something other than inevitable, but it's just what it is. Can we review Ford's market position in EVs and where it needs to go? I mean, it's just that company whose bread and butter has been large traditional vehicles for so long now.
Yeah, and those are going to continue. I think you got to give Ford credit for a couple things. One is that they are playing to their strengths, their brand strengths, whether it's Mustang and making a Mustang Mach-E EV. Mm-hmm. It's now bringing an electric powertrain into the F-Series pickup, the F-150, very critical. I think you're going to see more of that. GM, I think, is generally considered to be farther ahead in this. I think one of the interesting stories emerging out of GM right now is that they have got a new battery pack that they're going to be producing that they want to sell in the open market. So they essentially want to not only be an automaker, but be a supplier of a component. So essentially they could be supplying these battery packs and potentially hydrogen fuel cells to startups, to other automakers who don't want to make the investment. They see that as a new revenue stream. Ford, I think, is much more tailored in what they're doing. They're focused on the e-transit that you asked about at the top is a good example. They're focused on the commercial side of the business. One of the things about the new CEO, Jim Farley, that I think is underappreciated, and my colleague Jordan Grzeleski did a really, really smart story on this right as he was becoming CEO, is his understanding that the commercial business, which is boring and delivery vans, is really critical to the financial success of Ford. When he was running Europe a few years ago, they went from seventh in the marketplace to first in commercial vehicles. And it was all on the Transit, which we're just talking about here, which comes in kind of small, medium, and large and different kinds of sizes and everything like that. So they're focused more on those kinds of products and on their iconic products than they are in a bunch of new products. And GM, on the other hand, is developing a lot of new products. So it's more of a familiar versus a new strategy. And I think Ford is, at least now, is more on the familiar side, to taking vehicles that we all know what they are. We know what an F-150 is. But now we're going to offer it to you in a powertrain that can either be hybrid, gas electric, or pure electric. And I think their thinking is people will be more receptive of vehicles they know as opposed to something called the Cadillac Lyriq. What the hell is the Cadillac Lyriq? Yeah, what the hell is that? Okay, it's fine. I mean, it's an SUV-style kind of product, as I recall, but it's new. And, you know, GM is famous for throwing a lot of new names at people all the time, whereas how old is the BMW 3 Series? I mean, it's been around since you and I've been around,
right?
More or less. So there's familiarity. So I think that's one of the things. But in terms of volumes, I think GM is clearly ahead of the game. But right now, what I think you see is people really positioning for what's their competitive position, how do they stake it out, and I think you've got some interesting stories certainly in Detroit.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to Daniel House, an associate business editor with the Detroit News. Yeah, we should say that the Ford investment in Dearborn kind of pales in comparison to the new Fiat Chrysler plant that was announced not long ago. I mean, maybe we should just pull back and look at this spurt of investments and transition that the manufacturers are working hard to try to stay online for. Do you see investors confident that the public is going to follow this lead if the kind of math that you're talking about in terms of the kind of vehicles pans out?
Well, I think the short answer is, if you look at the valuation of Tesla, the answer is that investors clearly do see the value. The evaluation of Tesla is multiples of GM and Ford and FCA combined. I think the reason you don't see movement in the stocks of traditional auto companies is there is doubt among the investor class that they will be able to unhitch themselves from 100 years old technology and ultimately make the move into electrification. Now, I think this process, I know people, there are people who are probably listening who are going to say, I want my F-150 gas engine and I want to die in it, right? And I don't plan on dying for another 25 years. Well, okay. I think you're still going to have gas vehicles, maybe if not 25, but maybe 15 or 20. It's going to be a process. But to your question about valuation, I think the people who are viewed as being more unhitched from the ICE technology are the people where the value is going. So as General Motors is a good example, as it becomes more real to the investors that these guys are serious about electrification and an all-electric future, they've developed their own battery. There have been Ford executives that say, we can't afford to invest. We're going to need 100,000. You'd need to have 100,000 battery units a year. Right. But people would then say, well, if you think that the electric future is for real, you're going to need a hell of a lot more than 100,000 units. Mm-hmm. So I think GM has said, we see that future and we're making that investment. Ford's kind of saying, we're not so sure yet. And so I think you see that in the valuations.
Quarterly sales figures were out last week. I mean, things could have been horrendous in 2020 given the pandemic. But I mean, it looks as though the picture is different. Were there any numbers there that particularly surprised you?
I think the run rate of a return to the pre-pandemic sales levels, which you hear from General Motors, I think is a real indication, mm-hmm. Point one. Point two, the margins in North America for GM and Ford and for FCA were mind-blowing, head-slapping. I mean, we're in the mid-teens in some cases. We haven't seen numbers like that like in forever. Now, we've been cautioned, and analysts have cautioned, that that may be an aberration and likely is an aberration. It's not going to be a run rate. I've already had some conversations actually yesterday, the expectation that Ford's fourth quarter is not going to be like its third quarter. But I think General Motors has really negotiated its way through this. And a lot of this has to do with the product cycles. And, you know, a product cycle starts to unwind years prior to shows up in the marketplace, right? So GM happened to be lucky in the sense that they had some really high revenue and high profit product that was coming into the marketplace. The same thing for Ford, actually. They got a new F-150 that's now in production, and it's going to be coming out and hitting showrooms. It already is. And that's just going to help. The average transaction prices on those new products typically always go up. And with those products, the profits go up because they're a percentage pretty much of the sales. So, I mean, I think from an industry standpoint, we have to look at this and say that this industry is powered out of this pandemic and negotiated it much better than I think a lot of people thought. They took out a lot of debt to get through it, and they've already paid back big chunks of it already. Jeez. So, I mean, that shows you the cash generation that they have. And what people don't understand is when these companies have lowered their break-even point coming out of the bankruptcies, when they start to get into a thing where their financial gearing really picks up, their ability to make money is astonishing. And I think you're starting to see that. And the question is, where does that run rate settle? It's not going to be what it was in the third quarter, but where is it going to settle?
We've talked before about the fact that the UAW corruption scandal would, in another 2020, have been the story of the year. Mm-hmm. And since this all first started spooling out, we've had convictions of 15 people. Mm-hmm. Have you been following the union's developments to try to get its house in order?
Short answer is yes, but it's gone very quiet in recent weeks and months. As I think you've noticed, we haven't done much here there at the Detroit News on this story because basically it's in some negotiations. Or had been in negotiations. Now, the thing that I wrote about a few months ago, and I think we talked about, has now come to pass. Mm-hmm. And that is that the Republican incumbent appears to have lost this election, even though he doesn't want to acknowledge it. That means that on January 20th, there's going to be a Democrat in the White House, and there's going to be a new attorney general. So there's a very good chance that the U.S. attorney, in fact, I would say it's probably a near certainty that the U.S. attorney in the Eastern District in Detroit, Matthew Schneider, will be looking for a new job. So the question then becomes, what happens to the UAW? I think they had been kind of dragging their feet in the hopes that this is exactly what would happen. that we would get a new U.S. attorney and that the whole threat of the government taking over the union would recede and that they would say, okay, enough of you went to jail. Two former presidents have either been indicted or have pleaded guilty in the case of Gary Jones. And down the road we go. We got the bad apples out. Now, we don't need to oversee you, and down the road you go, which I think is exactly what Rory Gamble and the current union leadership would love to see happen.
Daniel House is an associate business editor at the Detroit News and also a columnist. You can read him regularly. Daniel, thank you for your time.
You bet.